Hey, Rocketeers. I'm Karen Tongson, filling in for our regular host, Bay Guy Branum. And welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly show picking over all the pop culture we love to love. With me to talk TV, film, music, and anything else entertaining, our digital strategist, Winter Mitchell.
Hello, hello.
Hello, Winter. Journalist and novelist, Margaret Wappler.
Good evening, Karen.
Oh, good evening. There was some, like,
Edgar Allan Poe drama. Are we on McNeil Lehrer hour?
Yeah.
I wanted to make it a little noir.
It's very noir. And our special guest this week, film critic Alonzo Duralde.
Howdy.
Hello, Alonzo.
Hey.
Tell our listeners a little bit about where to read you, where to find you.
Oh, okay.
A little bit about yourself.
Sure. Well, I write reviews for a website called The Wrap, T-H-E-W-R-A-P.
Yeah.
But I also review films and recap TV on a YouTube show called What the Flick on the Young Turks Network. And my husband, Dave White, and I do a podcast called Linoleum Knife.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
What's Linoleum Knife about?
Okay, did you ever see the Aqua Teen Hunger Force movie?
I've seen the show. I never saw the movie.
Well, at the beginning of the movie, they do a parody of that old let's all go to the lobby
thing.
Oh,
yeah.
But it turns into, like, they run into a second band that's like nachos and a pretzel. And it's,
oh, wow.
and it's Mastodon. And they do this whole song about, like,
amazing.
You know, don't talk, watch, you know. And all these admonitions to the audience. And one of the things is, like, if we catch you talking in the theater, we will cut off your lips with a linoleum knife.
That sounds fantastic.
What are we all doing
so
here? We should be listening to that
linoleum knife.
I know.
And I don't think very efficient for cutting off lips.
Well, yeah, you know, but it paints a picture.
Thank you. As you can tell from the dulcet tones of our guest, Alonzo Duralde, you should listen to Linoleum Knife. And apparently his husband has an even velvetier voice.
Much.
So coming up on this week's show, it's our summer movie preview. Popcorn, popcorn, popcorn. Let's all go to the movies. Plus, we'll be sharing our latest jams. But first, let's find out what arts and entertainment news or events have caught our attention this week. Winter Mitchell, what's caught your attention this week?
I love Dick.
We already
also,
knew
there's
that.
A show called I Love Dick. I just wanted to say that.
It is so fun to say. That is half the fun of watching the
really?
Show.
Really? Yeah. Really? I actually told my future mother-in-law about this, and she was like, oh, nice little Southern lady. She's like, I'll watch that. And I was like, no, you have to. It's Jill Soloway's latest effort on Amazon. Kevin Bacon is Dick. Katherine Hahn is Chris. Griffin Dunn. Whom I love.
Oh, wow.
It's
yeah.
Sylvier. It's about a couple that moves from New York to Marfa, Texas. He's a fellow. You know this.
A little art town. Yeah, it's a very inside kind of art world academia kind of jam.
You know, exactly.
It's also where they shot Giant.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. That's right. And I feel like this is, I'm really disappointed with Karen right now because she hasn't seen it. And this is like 100% your jam.
I had to actually grade finals and go to a dissertation defense.
Boo.
I get it, boo. You're tenured. Can't they wait a day?
Right? I should be going to Marfa and there should be a Jill Soloway show.
Yes.
In other words,
100%.
About my life. Do a Chautauqua.
I think you can pitch her. She's accessible.
Yeah.
The show, man, it's 7 episodes. It's really good. I tried to sort of do my research because I knew I was going to be in a room full of intellectuals and I wanted to make sure I had done my job, but it's very academia. It's very sort of like trying to sort of suss out gender identity, but it's not like you have to identify with either of these people. It gives you a lot of room to work with. And I love my favorite thing about it, which you'll love. This is for Margaret. It's very much through the female gaze, not the male gaze of the camera.
Yes.
Which I was like totally identified the moment I watched it. It's like Katherine Hahn is unbridled and wet the entire time. And I'm like, I understand, boo. And so Kevin Bacon, I think, has very few lines in it, which, you know, for someone who's had a career as long as he has, it takes a certain amount of masculinity, interest level, comfortability, and like confidence to play a role like that. He's basically just eye candy. And
intellectual eye candy.
Exactly.
Intellectual
eye very candy. Specific so kind of eye candy.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And he, but you know, he says stuff and then, you know, it comes out, but he's very much like a dude. And, yeah. You know, Texas is very much, Marfa is very much a character. Again, Marfa is a perfect place to set this. It just stands out and does its thing without being too Texas-y, which also is like...
Well, it's an anomaly in Texas,
yeah.
too, right?
Right, like Austin.
Yeah, like Austin, but it does a better job than Austin. I think Austin can sort of be manipulated if you wanted to.
Sure.
But yeah, I just really fell in love with it, but this is kind of spoilery, but there was one episode in particular that really made me emotional, and it's with one of the characters connecting with her sexual awakening because of her obsession with Michael J. Fox, which I identified with to the point that I cried so hard watching this episode because I was just like by myself saying like, why is this so perfect? And the show is just really like cool and chill and beautiful and not sappy and very honest.
So in sum, its libidinal energy makes up for some of the kind of arcane references to academia and scholarship and the art world and people like Dick Hebdige, who is the dick behind
Dick.
I was
just going to say, who used to head up the writing department that I graduated from.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Was he hot? That's such a cis-het female thing to say.
Debatable.
Was he hot?
Well, he's no Kevin Bacon. I'm just going to bet. I mean, I don't know.
Unlikely. And Chris Kross was there, too, at CalArts as well.
Yes.
So, you know. In any case, everybody take a look at I Love Dick.
Yes.
All right. Alonso, what have you been into this week?
I'll tell you, I've become one of those people that never reads. You know, because I got 80 TV shows I got to keep up with, and
right.
I got all these movies.
Well, you have less now after this massacre this week.
Well, this is true, but you know, but now I got to watch I Love Dick. I haven't gotten to that
yet. Right,
you know,
right.
Much or Master of None. Like, I mean, if I were just watching Netflix, I could barely be keeping up.
Right,
and, like,
of course.
But there's a million other things, and so I have not been reading, and I always feel bad about it. And, you know, it's that thing of like, oh, this is why America's going to hell is because we're not reading enough. So I just went to the shelf one day and I pulled off a book that my husband gave me for Christmas a couple of years ago and started reading. It's a biography of Harvey Kurtzman called Harvey Kurtzman, the Man Who Created Mad and Revolutionized Humor in America. Mm. And he is this guy who, you know, studied art like during the Depression. Like, New York had this amazing sort of, you know, school of graphic arts, went to World War II, came back, started working for EC Comics and doing like the, you know, Vault of Horror. And he created all the war comics and then created Mad Magazine. And then just sort of like everything from there, like, you know, just this sort of brand of American humor, American satire that he kind of started. Weirdly enough, left Mad over money, went to go work for Hugh Hefner, who was just getting Playboy rolling, gave him all this money to create a new humor magazine that lasted one issue called, legendarily, Trump.
No way!
Oh, wow.
Then that went under, and then he started another one called Humbug, which recently got this really big, like, hardcover, you know, reissue. So I mean, he's just had his finger in a lot of interesting places in the culture. And, you know, I love this sort of tradition of Jewish humor in America in like the 40s and 50s and 60s, and how that sort of got people, you know, it put Yiddish in the mouths of people who would never say it. I think we've seen the same thing with queer stuff in the last few years. You know, when Confessions of a Teenage Drama Queen came out, I was like, okay, that's it. We won the culture war. You know, like, I think the what Jews did back in the day, you know, queer audiences now, I think the trans community is really doing as far as like getting their stories out, getting their lingo out, and making it part of the fabric of the language that we all speak.
Mm-hmm. What is like a piece of lingo that the trans community has grafted onto the culture?
Oh, good
I'm
question.
I'm just curious. I'm just trying to think of one off the top of my head.
Of course, the second you asked me that question, I can't think of one, but there's got to be. Or if there isn't,
yes.
There's going to be within a year. We're seeing
Fish,
those stories.
Like, I mean, it's not quite, you know, which, you know,
the band?
Real, realistic. Apparently not, because Winter doesn't know what we're talking about. But, you know, it's especially when a female trans person, you know, passes.
Right.
And in a very realistic fashion.
And that person's called a fish? Is that what it is?
Or like very fishy.
But passes how?
Is read as a so-called quote-unquote real or cis cisgendered woman. So
there are so many terms.
Yeah, there are many terms.
I know. I need a glossary.
Yeah,
I'm
me too.
I'm take a glossary.
I'm currently proofreading the program book for Outfest, where I'm a programmer.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And like, there was this blah 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 masculine of center or something. I'm like,
mask of center.
I don't know what that is. I had to go to Google and
it's mask of center. It's somebody who's like sort of presents kind of androgynously, but tilts more to the masculine end of things. Maybe a little bit like if we can have a TV analog for that, that would be somebody like Shane.
Sure,
just
an L word.
Slightly,
yeah.
But that's like
a core of masculinity, but not necessarily an entire masculine
or
identity.
Like
oh,
Ruby Rose
so
or somebody
confused.
Like that.
Well,
this is lovely. And I know that there are a lot of stories too associated with Mad Magazine and its founding, especially related to like the blacklist and the kind of.
Oh, right. And it was born out of the whole thing with the comics getting, you know, hauled in front of the Senate committee and, you know, the Frederick Wortham and Seduction of the Innocent and the Comics Code and how, you know, Mad was the one thing that EC had that was really making money. So they made it a magazine, which then meant if it wasn't a comic book, it didn't have to pass the code standards.
That's right.
Well, super fascinating. So for those of you who are not reading enough out there, grab this book. Apropos the topic of reading, let me hand it over to Margaret Wappler to tell us what she's all about this week.
I am all about the return of the Pop Rockets Summer Book Club.
Hello!
So I put up on the Facebook group the other day asking for suggestions from the group. And basically, the requirements of this particular summer is that we pick a book that came out between the years 1900 and 2000, a big swath of time. I think you can think of something. It has to be by a woman. It can be any genre. And people have flooded the page with really wonderful suggestions. People like Toni Morrison and Ursula K. Le Guin and Octavia Butler. Not that I'm saying these are going to necessarily be part of the final vote, but I just wanted to put it on the horizon to everyone listening that we are going to have a vote on the Facebook group later this week. So like, I'm going to put it up on Wednesday, and I'll leave the voting up until probably about Friday. And then we'll make a decision, and we'll start reading.
Team Jacqueline Suzanne.
How many books did she write, though?
Well, three major ones and then a couple of novellas in there. But Valley of the Dolls, The Love Machine, and Once Is Not Enough are the holy trinity as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, those sound like really apropos summer reads. But you want to throw something in the mix here, Margaret?
Well, I also want to say that we're going to discuss the book because I want people to get ready for this. We're going to discuss the book on June 26th. So put that on your calendar now. You'll have basically a month to read this. That's enough time, right?
That's a sufficient amount of time.
I know there's so many things on Netflix and whatever else, but we have to get to this
And again, summer movies that we'll be talking about a little bit later.
Yes.
Do you have any secret special wishes or front runners in your heart of hearts? Or do you not want to tip the scales at all by
saying
anything
about
that?
I don't want to taint the proceedings. You know, okay. I'm no Trump over here. I don't want to play Russia. I just want to keep things pure.
All right. Well, there you go, Rocketeers. Get ready.
Yeah, you do.
She wants other Margaret.
Big news cannot be trusted.
Margaret Atwood, Marguerite Duras, you know,
she's
somebody.
All Margarets.
She's every Margaret. Warning, there may be some unintended Master of None Season 2 spoilers. So please, you know, I don't know, plug your ears, go la 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 la, whatever you need to avoid being spoiled. I have to admit that I wasn't fully on board with Master of None Season 1.
Ew.
In fact, I didn't finish watching it when it originally was released and just sort of started plunging back into it in preparation to kind of like binge Season 2. And honestly, I think as a kind of coherent expression now of like what Aziz Ansari and Alan Yang's vision of, you know, this kind of experimental show that mixes genres, that is led by a story arc, but that really can plunge into these vignette-y explorations of the city, of romance, of, in fact, bringing peripheral characters to the forefront and making them really kind of central and crucial, and understanding that those side characters, or even people who aren't side characters on the show, but who are characters in the city of New York, have stories that are just as compelling that we should be watching. And so, you know, this season kicks off with Dev, you know, pretty much trying to recover from a breakup and learning how to make pasta in Modena and speaking Italian. And so you already have these kind of experimental, you know, kind of homages to Italian mid-century cinema, the kind of black and white look. But my favorite episodes of the season happen to be what I don't even know if you can call them bottle episodes, because there's not such a story through line throughout. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, there's not such a consistent story through line throughout. But I Love New York, or New York, I Love You, I believe, is the title of that episode, where it's all about side character, people who aren't characters in the show, mm-hmm. but just moving through the city and experiencing their lives.
That was pretty beautiful.
That was gorgeous. The Thanksgiving episode.
Amazing.
Which was all about his lesbian BFF, Denise. And, yeah, I mean, those two really stand out.
Angela Bassett as her mom. And
Angela Bassett, spoiler alert.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't know if people would consider that a spoiler. Right? I know.
Well, there goes another show I don't have to watch.
Right? Exactly, because we know that she's in it. But, I mean, I was profoundly moved to tears and laughter at the gym while watching the Thanksgiving episode.
Yeah, great.
So there's a lot of heart. And, you know, that some people have taken issue with the kind of main love plot that develops in this season.
Yeah. Question. Is he still with the same girlfriend from season one?
No. So the season opens with him already kind of, or at least in this taffy pull breakup with Rachel, who was the girlfriend in season one. And there are a range of other interests who appear throughout, but there is one primary kind of object of his attention and affection.
Yeah. That was, I told Karen earlier, I didn't love that so much. But I did like the episode where, spoiler, he goes on all the dates.
Oh, date night. Yeah, that was a great episode.
Great episode. Because I also like the fact that he went on dates with, like, a bunch of different women. And they were all, and he, two Eastern Indian women. I couldn't believe it. But, like, he, you know, it was interesting for him to sort of show that he has vast interests and he has an interest level. But then he sort of kind of tried to make it work with the East Indian woman and it didn't sort of pan out. But I thought that it was a really good season. I just was a little lost. I think the capsule episodes were really good.
Yeah.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Like Thanksgiving is by far my favorite. I just feel like I don't want to say this because I love the show, but I feel like he was like pulling for something and not trying to pull it.
There's some incredulity around the main romance plot, which I'm not going to reveal. I'm being very spoiler savvy here, folks, so I hope you appreciate it. But, you know, I mean, obviously, you guys have already started weighing in on this on the Facebook page, so please continue and watch out for spoilers, anybody who wants to participate in the conversation.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're listening to Pop Rocket, and we'll be right back to talk about summer movies right after this.
From the dawn of time, one podcast has unlocked the secrets of science and technology to enrich the lives of billions. And now, after a year where they've unlocked the golden age of knowledge, they're about to hit warp speed and go stratospheric.
Wait, hold up.
On Oh No, Ross and Carrie, we don't make extraordinary claims. We investigate them.
We go undercover with fringe religious groups, investigate paranormal claims, and we participate in pseudoscientific medical treatments and then report our findings to you.
And yes, we've even investigated Scientology.
Shh, Ross, shh. New episodes every month at MaximumFun.org.
Oh No, Ross and Carrie. They show up so you don't have to.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Karen Tongson. With me in the studio are...
Winter Mitchell.
Margaret Wappler.
And Alonzo Duraldi.
So this week we're going to be talking about everything having to do with summer movies. And I want to begin this segment by really thinking about what constitutes a summer movie to each of you. So whether or not it's a personal association or what have you, Margaret, when I say the word summer movie, what are some of the kind of nostalgic reflections you have or expectations you have around a movie that you're going to see this time of year?
I think the typical definition of the summer movie is something dumb, fun, and big. And the blockbuster, the kind of movie that you go to camp out in the air conditioning for. And
you're like, I'll pay the $15 just so I can be in the AC.
Exactly. And like, you don't want it to be too terribly challenging, but you don't want it to be like a hot mess either. You want it to be fun and entertaining and just that perfect kind of, you know, something that probably has The Rock in it or someone like The Rock, if not The Rock.
I really need The Rock at this point in my life.
I really do. I mean, I need, in the summertime, I need like a monthly installment of The Rock.
Exactly.
So I'm happy to see that Baywatch is coming. But at any rate, yeah, that's what I think the typical definition is. But I think there also is room for the kind of like sweet, romantic, fun summer love comedy, which I think like for me, the... Big Sick definitely checks that off the list as far as what's coming up. You know, a love story that has real kind of teeth in terms of, like, what we're talking about in the relationship with, like, race and illness and, you know, do we belong and all those kind of questions. So I also like that as a summer movie, mm-hmm. the kind of, like, sweet comedy that still has some real issues at its heart.
So, something kind of human and quaint about it,
yeah.
right? Like to kind of countervail the all of the big explosions and hard bodies, et cetera.
Right. We need hard bodies and some soft hearts.
Exactly. Winter, what about you? What are your, you know, what are your associations with your favorite summer movies? Like, you know, if you could name a prototype for you of what would be the four quadrants of the summer movie, what would that, you know, what does that look like?
I feel like the four quadrants of a summer movie, it has to have big stars. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like people that I kind of don't, I kind of feel like they have to spend half their year making this movie. I need lots of explosions and effects. I also need a premise that is so otherworldly that it could probably work. And I also want a nice soundtrack. I need a soundtrack. I need a hit song. I need something that, you know, that works for me, and I can, you know, if I hear it in the future, like, I will be able to sort of be like, oh yeah, that was in what, you know, that movie. That was in that movie. So it's just, you know,
it's
to
a
me,
source of your summer jams or some of your summer jams.
Not necessarily. Like, I feel like, okay, for me, the standard, and I know it's been 30 years, but Back to the Future to me is the standard a summer movie. So anything that can sort of reach that level, to me, that's a four quadrant summer film. Very few movies have been able to sort of hit that since, like, maybe Independence Day. There's no songs in that. But I'm just saying, like, there's, you know, but Will Smith was in it. So that counts, right?
So yeah.
I mean, he's made some songs.
He's made songs.
Well, you know, Alonzo, I mean, as a person who's actually written a book about seasonal cinema, you wrote a book about Christmas TV, right?
Christmas movies, yeah.
Christmas movies. And so, you know, is what we're talking about here, is that from a critic's eye or critic's lens?
Yeah, I mean, I think y'all are hitting on it. There is there is that movie that you want to be air-conditioned to, you know? And I mean, I'm going to show the rings in my tree here. Like, for me, like, as a kid, summer, like, Grease was a movie going back to over and over again. And, yeah. and E.T. Like, those were two.
I didn't mean to say wow like you were 9,000 years old.
Let me tell you about how I won World War II. But yeah, no, those are the, and then, like, you know, I remember for, like, the summer after high school was the summer of, like, Ghostbusters and Gremlins.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the summer after college was the summer of, like, Die Hard and A Fish Called Wanda and Roger Rabbit. And, like, so those are, yeah, you're right. Like, they have to be really high concept and effects are nice and they definitely help and stars are good. And if you can give me a love theme hit single, we're going to town.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the things that I've noticed, and I think that people have collectively noticed, is that this so-called summer type of movie has been encroaching earlier and earlier into the spring schedule, right? So we had a pretty full April and May glut of openings.
Oh, March. March, we had Logan and, you know, Power Rangers and, like, stuff that would have totally been summer movies.
100%.
To bring it back to Christmas movies, the metaphor I make is, you know, Hallmark gets crazy ratings for their Christmas movies every year. So now they make, like, 30 every year. And so they have to start showing them the weekend before Halloween to fit them all in. Yeah. And so when all Hollywood makes is summer movies, then all year becomes summer. Like, it becomes this thing of, like, I guess we're going to really super summer it between May and August, but really all year is a time to have New York blow up, you know?
But is that, I've said this before, I think that's kind of our fault by letting that be the calendaring, because the world has evolved now past, you know, people, it was always assumed that summer slows down, but for a lot of people now, summer doesn't necessarily slow down. You know, you're a parent and you have young kids. They might not be age appropriate.
Well, I think summer's always been aimed at, like, 13-year-old boys.
Right,
13-year-old boys who will go again and again and again. And of course, and I don't know if 13-year-old boys even go to the movies anymore.
Exactly.
but then that took over the whole slate. You know what I mean? With, like, all the Marvel and DC movies and all the franchises that exist, I feel like it's just been this steady seeping out from summer
and also
cater to the 13-year-old boy taste.
And when you're trying to play China, you don't have to subtitle an explosion. So, you know, all the stuff that travels really well and becomes these big global hits, you know, the triple X movies and the Fast and the Furious movies,
right.
you know, that's just the pure economics of, like, you know, comedies don't translate because it's very, you know, cultural, or, you know, they don't want to see, like, you know, the China, they say, like, that, like, oh, you can't have, like, black leads in a movie that's going to make money in China, or you can't have, like, gay characters in a movie that's going to play in certain countries.
Right,
so,
right.
Like, if you just strip it down to explosions on The Rock, you know, you're golden.
Right. 100%.
Well, so if we are looking at the slate, the schedule, you know, from the kind of early March explosive hits to, you know, going into summer proper, into
sure.
June, into the summer equinox, or, like, you know, whatever, solstice. Do we see a film that heralds the beginning of summer? Is there one film right now that's just like, okay, now we're deep in summer movie season? And is it Guardians of the Galaxy?
I think
too?
It's Guardians of the Galaxy too. Yeah, I think Marvel now owns the first weekend in May, and it mm-hmm. used to be it was all about Memorial Day. It was that Wednesday before
yeah.
Memorial Day weekend. That was when summer started. But now it's that first weekend in May. And again, like you said, March, April, plenty of movies that in years past would have been summer films, but that Marvel has staked that date, and that's when summer starts, whether you like it or not.
And so, I mean, now that, you know, like, there are a few other films that kind of tried to open around that same weekend, and where they just, like, for example, I had tremendous curiosity about this film called The Circle with Tom Hanks
yeah.
and Emma Watson, which is about, you know, some kind of insidious social media, Steve Jobsian type
surveillance.
You know, surveillance culture or whatever. And, you know, it seemed to have flopped heartily. And, you know, it's now only available for two showtimes in the middle of the day, like once a week or
That's
something.
That's lucky.
I haven't read the book, but for what I understand, it's not close to the book. And what they did in terms of pulling it away from the book wasn't a good move.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it on our own.
Well, so
I don't see everything. Yeah.
Well, so there you go. They didn't even make you go see it.
Yeah,
so.
All right. The rap was like, you can sit this out. Don't worry about it.
It premiered at Tribeca, so I sent my New York guy. So.
Well, and yeah, and also, like, the Mother's, like, there's always kind of a Mother's Day movie too, and this
sure.
year it was Snatched, right? With but I've noticed too, looking at the schedule of films, you know, set to be released in the coming months, we are surfeit of the third installment of several franchises. Mm. I mean, you know, before it used to be rare that a franchise would achieve a trilogy, and now it seems like everybody
it's
gets
required.
One, right?
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. So it's like Cars 3, Despicable Me 3, Pitch Perfect 3.
Is that coming out this summer?
I don't know that it is.
I feel like it's a Christmas.
There's like
next
Transformers
year.
5.
No, there's no way there's a Transformers coming out.
Oh, yes, there
oh,
is.
Oh, yeah, there is.
Yes, there
oh,
is.
Oh, this year?
This summer.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, fuck.
The Last Night with a K.
No, thank you. I will say something. Can we just take 2 seconds really quick to talk about, just because I'm really feeling like this is personal to me, and I don't know why, even though I really feel like he needs to make better choices. But the reveal of Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man Tell Tales or Don't Die,
oh, God.
Is... Paul McCartney's in it. And I don't know if this is... is this,
oh, that's the end of the franchise.
That's yeah, big, like, I just, why
would Paul McCartney bother?
First of all, I really think that they threw this character poster out. Alonzo, tell me if I'm actually getting close as I possibly can to why they released this character poster so late, so close to releasing. But, like, I'm just not, like, I'm not buying what Disney is trying to give me on this film.
it does whiff of desperation just a little bit.
What's happening?
I think there was a great tweet where somebody said, you know, Disney was like, Disney, would you like to see this Pirates of the Caribbean movie? Me. Sure, that was entertaining. Disney, great, here's 6 more of them for the next 40 years. You know, that's one that everybody thought, another one? We're still doing this?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sure, you know, I don't follow this stuff super closely, but I know there are, they poll movie audiences for, like, awareness and interest, and, like, do you know this movie exists? Do you give a shit? Do you want to see it? And I'm sure they start looking at the numbers, they're like, all right, put out the McCartney poster, you know,
yeah.
We got to get some boomers in the theater, you know.
Yeah.
But also, though, in addition to the glut of sequels that people want and people don't want, it's the season. Summer is often the season, or has become in recent years, the season of the reboot, right? Of TV shows, of previous franchises. So we have Wonder Woman, we've got Baywatch coming out, and we also have a big marquee player in this game, and that's Alien Covenant.
Yes.
So,
well, don't forget King Arthur.
No. I know. R.I.P.
Which they're taking, yeah, exactly, taking a huge hit on.
Oh, and there's also another, let's not forget Agatha Christie's Murder on the Orient Express.
Is that this summer, too?
That is also I thought it was Christmas.
Oh, I thought that it was coming out this summer, but maybe it's just because I saw a magazine and thought it was immediately on the horizon. But
a fun fact, if you adapt an Agatha Christie movie, you are not allowed to change the ending. So, ta-da, you already know how this movie
it's already spoiled.
Oh, whack.
But so amongst these, okay, you know, we had a whole episode about reboots, but amongst these things that are coming up, like what is giving us the biggest, you know, tingles or, you know, anticipation?
Well, I really want to say Wonder Woman
yes.
because it's close to my heart. But I have to say, every time I watch a trailer for it, it seems very turgid to me and rather uptight and not fun. And I'm curious if I'm just mistaken. Like, have you seen it?
No, I haven't. But I want so badly for Wonder Woman to not be like more shit soup from DC.
Yeah.
You know,
honey.
Like another Suicide Squad, another Zack Snyder, like brown, loud, unfun slog. I want some zip and some color. And I don't
it
watch
looks
trailers,
colorless.
But
that's part of it, too.
Yes.
It
I just would have gone the other way. I feel like they should have gone campy.
Full Linda
and,
Carter.
Yes, and totally Underoos ridiculousness with yeah. it. And instead, they took this very serious, like...
They will not
like the most serious Game of Thrones episode you can imagine.
they will not turn tail. Like they, you know, people hate those movies. They somehow make money anyway, and they are just committed to Zack Snydering the shit out of some really fun characters that could be entertaining movies. I like Warner Brothers needs a Guardian so bad. I mean, just in terms of a movie
yes.
that's going to flip the script and be like, you know what?
Playful.
Let's let's have some laughs here. Like it's not this is not curing cancer.
I don't know. I just like I'm really Wonder Woman is my shit like from birth.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And I am disappointed in how they've handled this. I'm disappointed in the promotion. I'm disappointed in the casting. I don't necessarily like her. I don't trust her. There's something about her.
You don't trust the new Wonder Woman.
I don't trust Gal.
She was the best thing in Dawn of Justice, but that
yeah, but
she was
that
in Dawn
wasn't.
Of
but you're talking about Dawn
that.
Of Justice,
yeah.
okay? And
easy
I say
to
that,
rise above,
right?
Yeah.
Exactly. So like, I'm struggling, and I want it to win, but then I also heard a rumor, and I'm just trying to make this rumor stick, and nobody wants to pick me up on it. But for a long time, Warner Brothers was talking about Day and Date. So, like, doing a release in theaters and VOD. And I thought to myself, like, this is whack, and you guys are whack, and you're doing this shit not a justice. But the thing is, like, I felt like they went so deep into the dark, dour brownness of it because they wanted it to have legs instead of doing what I would have preferred, which I grew up on Linda Carter.
Yeah.
And, you know, you know you can't get Linda Carter to do this, but you can get sort of – there was, like, levity to it. There was, like, a levity – cheesiness of it that you can still tell a story without it having to be so heavy. You know,
well,
heavy.
Yeah, superhero movies now, and especially the DC ones, it's like it's the Mahabharata. Like you cannot have any kind of like four color goofy anything. Like the Marvel movies, I think a good balance. Like
100%.
They treat it super seriously in terms of the actual plotting, but the tone is lighter and brighter. But God, yeah, these DC movies, it's Schindler's List with an invisible plane.
Yeah, I should. I know. I should be all over
that
Wonder Woman.
It.
Exactly.
My God!
Can we please work on that script together?
Well, so does this mean everybody's just primed and pumped for Baywatch then?
Yes, dude.
I mean,
like,
I hate
know,
to say
got
it,
Vin
but I'm
Diesel,
ready.
Totally going to go see it.
I'm ready for it,
so
too,
into,
honestly.
I'm ready.
No, Sarah was like, you know, we were on a little mini vacay, and Sarah like was reading this bag, and she's like, we must see Baywatch.
It's like not even a question that's not going to be viewed.
Yeah, it's going to be. See, I think the people are going to go. But I mean, I don't know. I see dubious
Alonso
faces.
Is like
I am not
pursing
allowed
his
to
lips.
Talk about
Why?
It.
Why? You saw it already?
I saw it, and I am not allowed to talk about it.
Give us a hand signal
with your
that
eye.
Will convey
I
to
am
us.
Not allowed.
You take this shit way seriously.
To talk about
are they doing anything for you?
I don't want Paramount on my ass about this, so
okay.
I
okay. Alonso,
you need to get on that
it.
Lot, baby.
So
yeah.
We're excited about Baywatch, right?
I'm very excited about
okay,
it.
Okay, but now on the other end of the spectrum, though, like again, we have a very venerable reboot coming up, or at least a reanimation of the Alien series.
I'm excited about that. I'm excited about it only because I have learned to appreciate Alien as I've grown as a feminist. Mm-hmm. So, like, as my feminism has expanded, partly due to this administration and partly due to just age. Like, now I look back, it's because, you know, I still want to always tie things into the entertainment of it all. And I feel like Sigourney Weaver being this character in the late 70s, mid 80s, just like that character, I never understood as a kid, like, why is it important for her? And then you go back in time and look at all the action movies that were out there and how women were portrayed and what their roles were in said movies. And you have somebody like Sigourney Weaver. Like, I did my research and I was like, she didn't just get to be, you know, battling ghosts and Zool and be possessed and monkeys and stuff. She, like, you know, she, like, did some hard, hardcore work and really carried those films.
In the original Dykes to Watch Out For strip, where the Bechdel test was born, the Alison Bechdel thing about, you know, the movie has to have two women that talk to each other and not about men, Alien is cited as the example.
Wow.
Says, the last movie I saw that fits that is Alien. The two women talk to each other about the alien.
Yeah. You
know? It's also my favorite childbirth movie. So you'll be watching it to prepare.
For tips, right? You know, the one thing that's putting me off slightly is just like, do I have to watch Prometheus so I understand?
I have a soft spot for Prometheus. Okay. I'll just say it.
You don't have to, but I would say read the Prometheus wiki page.
That's a good idea.
It is sort of a sequel
to Prometheus. There's some interesting scenes and moments and ideas in Prometheus. It's like a failure overall, but there are very interesting parts that I will just give a thumbs up to.
All right. So we're very game for these kind of big titles that are coming out. But let's turn a little bit to that category of heartwarming, you know, the films with a lot of heart and, you know, like that may be smaller. Chris on Twitter asked us, if we're not into superhero flicks, what are we going to see?
First of all, I love you, Chris. I love you. Like, that's exactly how I feel, especially this summer where I'm like, okay, soon I'll have a child and I'll have to go see this kind of crap all the time. So I really want to see adult movies this summer.
You'll be hankering for superheroes because you've got years of, like, the little kitty cartoons.
It's right, because she's having a boy.
Despicable Me 3 coming up in Cars 3.
I was going to go and talk about The Big Sick again because I started to talk about it, and I want to explain a little bit more, but for people who don't know what it is, it's screenwriters Emily V. Gordon and Camille Nanjiani, who you guys know from Silicon Valley, making their own love story and putting it on the screen. Basically, the two of them met, and they were in love in Chicago, and then all of a sudden she fell quite ill, and it kind of spun their relationship in disaster. And, of course, there's lots of elements about the families involved, and I haven't seen it, but the trailer looks wonderful to me, and I'm just a big fan of Camille.
Mm-hmm. I hear it's great. I'm dying to see it. Though a movie that I can talk about that I saw that's opening in early June is called Band-Aid. It's written and directed by Zoe Lister-Jones, who you might know from the TV show Life in Pieces. She also stars in the film with Adam Pally. And they play a married couple who are unhappy with their own lives and unhappy with each other. And they fight all the time. And it occurs to them that they should start turning their arguments into songs. And they form a band in their garage as marital therapy. And it starts kind of working in a weird way. And their weird neighbor just happens to be Fred Armisen. And, oh, what do you know? He can play drums.
It sounds like a fun concept.
It's a fun concept. It's a smart movie. I think it really, you know, it talks about relationships and about, you know, I was telling somebody, oh, yeah, there's this great scene where they sort of delineate the difference between men and women. And my friend started doing, like, the Sinbad, like, stand-up bit. Women be like, but men be like. But no, not like that at all. Like, in a smart way, you know.
Let me just say it really quickly. I was on a flight recently with Sinbad, and he charmed everybody on that plane.
He can work a room.
That was a happy flight.
Girl.
And y'all will dig this.
Sounds like a skit. True story. True story.
Band-Aid is apparently the first movie where the entire crew was female.
I will see it for that reason.
The camera angles were very womany.
She can have my money in this case.
Is anyone interested in some of these smaller films that have recently come out, like Everything with Amanda Sternberg?
Nope.
Who is Rue from The Hunger Games? Is that this week?
Yeah.
And Three Generations, the transgender film about profound whiteness and all of that.
What is it?
It stars Susan Sarandon.
Naomi Watts Naomi Watts and Elle Fanning.
It's Elle Fanning.
Wait a minute. Who just plays when we were defending kid. Susan Sarandon? Just when we were
I love Susan Sarandon, but this is the most milquetoast movie about trans stuff ever. Like, they never say the word trans.
Oh really?
Yeah. Okay. And like, Elle Fanning, we're supposed to buy as this, like, lives in Brooklyn and DJs and skateboards
and is a trans guy
with Elle Fanning. With zero trans friends. Like, none. Not even on the internet.
Oh, wow.
And it's all about how, like, Elle Fanning's mom, you know, Naomi Watts, and his grandmother, who is Susan Sarandon, who was a lesbian in the movie, can't quite get their heads around the whole trans thing. And I'm like,
oh my God,
I'm sorry.
So...
Every documentary I've seen about trans teenagers, they go online. They know their shit. They got the talking points. They hand out. They get reading assignments. Like, they get the family on board. And yeah, if your family is, like, you know, Oklahoma Christians and there's no dealing with them, then whatever, you know. But these are Brooklyn, you know, jazz people who should be more on top of it.
Isn't Susan Sarandon's character also supposed to be a lesbian?
Yeah, she's got a girlfriend and literally has run a jazz club.
Oh, right. So this sounds
and
just like
Watts
a total train wreck.
It's so
I think I
want to
see it. Yeah,
we must cease talking about it now. It sounds like such a train wreck. Okay, so I just want to throw the question out there because, you know, because we're often confronted with reboots and also sequels, we asked our Rocketeers to tell us what sequel they would most like to see that hasn't been made
yet.
And yeah, and so Ross Ida gave us a couple on Twitter, and one was a reboot of, or like a sequel to Singles, and what everybody's doing now in their 40s. And
the other
called,
it ain't pretty.
Doubles.
Called Doubles. And
Campbell
then,
Scott still doesn't have that super speedway train system
built
yet.
Oh, right, yes. Oh, God. The good music. I remember that.
I feel like his arch nemesis would be, what's the guy?
Elon Musk.
Yes.
Elon Musk.
I would watch that movie.
I would watch
too.
That so hard.
I think Ross is a Seattle Rocketeer, so that's why he's invested in that one. But he also proposed maybe a reboot or a sequel to Love and Basketball. What do we think about that? Are we on board for something like that? Or, you know, kind of, you know, because it was a story that, like, I don't know, could have had some legs, and no pun intended, around the basketball. I don't know. People seem very enthused about it on the Twitters. Does anybody have any feelings?
That was a lovely movie, but I always think of when people talk about why don't they make, you know, smart black rom-coms, they always say because Love and Basketball didn't make money and Love Jones didn't make money and Something New didn't make money.
Yeah.
And those are all good movies, but, you know, it's hard to convince people to make a follow-up to a film unless it, like, flopped theatrically but then had a giant life on DVD or something.
I think about, like, Best Man. The Best Man is, like, when that movie came out, it was amazing. And then Best Man Christmas, too amazing. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So, like, I just feel like they only people could only, like, accept a movie in one certain form with, like, 40 black celebrities in it.
And I think Like a Man too.
Yeah, like, that's all we needed. Yeah.
Weirdly, the movie I'm probably looking forward to most this summer is a sequel, and it's The Trip to Spain.
Oh, wait, shut up. Are you serious?
They're back.
Wait, is it a prequel or it's a third one?
It's a third one. They did this trip,
amazing.
The trip to Italy, now trip to Spain.
Oh, really?
Steve Coogan, Rob Brydon, great food, Michael Caine impersonations, I'm in.
So excited.
I love Steve Coogan.
Me too.
And any last sort of, you know, if there's something that you're anticipatory for, is there anything left that we haven't managed to cover today? I mean, you know, like, there's a ton of stuff that's coming
out.
You
blew over The Mummy with Tom Cruise.
Oh, I totally blew over The Mummy with Tom Cruise.
And I don't know why you hate him so much.
Oh,
he's done nothing but give you searing performances and effective running for over 40 years. And this man can't
run.
He's the last vestige of Rosie O'Donnell's heterosexuality.
That's going to be on his tombstone.
Yeah. But, I know. Well, I did see the trailer for The Mummy at the theater.
It looks
just
great.
Like, they're making another one?
No, I mean,
does every lighting and camera angle look like they're desperately trying to not show his age?
No, I think he looks good. He looks
because
good.
Of the camera angles.
Because of the camera. Well, he pays for it. The only thing that I think is interesting
sure
is that
money.
Universal had to, they were going to lose this library, and they had to unearth these legendary film characters, if that was going to be it. And, you know...
What better thing to unearth than a mummy?
Than
there
a mummy! But I just like the idea...
The mummy's in a prison, guys.
Yeah. In a prison! Of its mind! But I also think that, like, it's interesting to... you know, listen, I am a Tom Cruise apologist as well, because I think he's, take away his personal bullshit, he is effective at being a movie star. And this film looks good. This film looks... Don't look away from
me. No, I'm not. I'm agreeing with the movie star part. For my professional purposes, I don't watch trailers because I don't like to be pre-sold.
Wow.
I know. It's hard because what will happen
so
is...
You're so on top of it.
But what happens, though, is like there'll be one movie that I missed all the press screenings to and I have to pay to go see it. And then I see like 10 trailers. It's everything I've been ducking for the last 6 months in one go. The one that I have seen that's made me excited for this movie,
I bet you I know what it is.
I pray that it's not just because that all the good stuff is in the trailer. The Red Band trailer for Girls Trip.
Yes.
I'm totally there for that.
If that movie can be as funny as the trailer, like that trailer is already my favorite movie this summer. Yes. If the movie itself works, I'm in.
I'm really worried about that. The idea that I think that I'm worried that the trailer's
got
everything. It's going to be like a sister's situation or what have you, but you know.
What about Thor 3? Looks better than Thor 1 and 2.
I don't know.
I've never been there. It is just a tiny whisper at the bottom of the Grand Canyon.
And is the person whispering at the bottom of the Grand Canyon, does that happen to be Sir Patrick Stewart in the Emoji Movie?
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
That poor man.
Look, which has to be better than the Angry Birds movie, right?
I mean, no. Who knows?
I mean, the Emoji Movie seems like that's our Angry Birds of this summer.
Yes.
Like, what is this doing here? Why do we need
this? Sony signed a three-picture deal with phones. Like, you know, I don't get it, where these movies are coming from.
Speaking of Sony, Spider-Man Homecoming.
The fact that it's under the Disney Marvel umbrella, I mean, like, it's a Sony movie still, but it's under the kind of Kevin Feige, you've jumped in the family. Yeah, that gives me hope. Because again, like you were saying with The Mummy, the only reason they did Amazing Spider-Man was because they were going to lose the character if they didn't do it again. Now it feels like they might get it more right.
Amazing Spider-Man just felt like a fight between mom and dad as they're breaking up. It was like, don't break up, or if you guys break up, it'd be great because we have two Christmases.
What about Beatrice at Dinner? That looks pretty good.
I love me some Mike White. He wrote it.
I'm definitely in.
And I think the Sundance talk was good. So yeah, I totally want to see that one.
So it's the prestige film of the summer, right? Salma Hayek stars.
They throw a few out. Like The Beguiled, I'm excited about. The new Sofia Coppola movie. It's about to premiere at Cannes. You know, it's Nicole Kidman and Colin Farrell and Elle Fanning again.
What's up with Elle Fanning?
She works.
She works, and Dakota wants to get a degree.
Yeah, I would say, I'm sure Dakota's going to be like a PhD, and like Elle is just snapping
like,
it all up.
Yeah, I just want to be a star.
No moss on her.
Yeah,
and nobody is as eager to see The War of the Planet of the Apes as I am.
Fucking no.
Loved the first one. Second one was
me.
I'm
so into the Planet of the Apes series.
When's the war going to end? I thought they won.
Well, I mean, the Woody Harrelson, though, is the enemy in this one. I know.
I don't like him as an enemy. I think this is the last one.
Are you sure? They said, they promised this would be it. So.
We'll all be there rooting for the apes, for sure.
And there are two movies this summer named for Simon and Garfunkel songs that I can't get out of my head now.
Those are?
Baby Driver, which is the new Edgar Wright movie that people loved at South by Southwest. And The Only Living Boy in New York, which is from
I love that song.
Well, the movie is from my new favorite terrible screenwriter, Alan Loeb, the guy who gave us Collateral Beauty and The Space Between Us.
And The Proposal.
Did you write that too?
I think so.
All right.
Oh,
well,
my goodness.
That was not nearly as bonkers as the other two. Did y'all see Collateral Beauty?
No.
Oh my God.
But that title is
the title
Will
and the poster.
Smith one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
an ensemble.
That title is like he drew it out of two different hats. It's like meaningful words.
Collateral
Beauty.
Get some edibles and the right friends and watch Collateral Beauty. Oh my God, it's bananas.
Oh, okay.
It's so bad.
He has a really nice house though.
Well, so I think we're wrapping up our conversation here, but if you want to pitch your favorite Simon and Garfunkel song title for a movie, Rocketeers, join us on the Facebook group.
I want us to sound a little bit more like a gas station TV show when you say that.
A gas station
gas
TV
station
show?
TV show.
Oh, like at the pump?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
You turn our Facebook group. You have your Rouse Kurt.
Oh, come on. I ride or die for Planet of the Apes. All right, we'll be right back in just a few.
Thank you. Are you easily confused by terms like cultural appropriation, cisgender, and woke?
Or maybe you find yourself constantly explaining terms like these and you need a place to vent.
Do you have a love for all things pop culture, social commentary, and politics?
Sounds like you need Minority Corner,
where you can learn, laugh, and play.
Sounds like Blue's Clues.
Only it's more black, gay, and ladylike.
James and Aneke will happily administer your weekly dose each and every Friday.
You can listen on Maximum Fun or wherever you get your podcasts.
Minority Corner.
With a K.
Because the C was taken.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Karen Tongson. With me in the studio are...
Winter Mitchell.
Margaret Wappler.
Alonzo Duraldi.
And so every week, you know what question we ask at the end of the show, and that is, what's your current jam? So, Winter, what is your current jam?
Okay, this is really annoying. This is really annoying. But Michael McDonald and Kenny Loggins are having one concert this year.
Oh, I'm in. Where? When?
Oh, yeah. That's that. Yeah. This is where it gets.
Is it a fire festival? What's going on?
No, fire fest. Weekend three, baby. This is where it gets very road trip. It's in Lincoln, California, which is deep in Meth County, like 90 minutes outside of Sacramento, which like...
That seems correct.
Yes. Like, I don't even want to be in Sacramento, but now I have to go 90 minutes past that. So they're doing a concert together. I'm just struggling with, you know, it's less than 3 weeks away. I'm struggling with like trying to figure out if I can actually negotiate going to see it. But I've been going back through like the Michael McDonald of it all. And this song, I just like this song. And he doesn't have much of his library on streaming because he probably wants you to go to Lincoln fucking California and see him. But this is I Believe It. And I just like this song. I just felt like it was my jam of the week.
You've seen all of Yacht Rock, right?
Those are my friends.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes. So I was watching Yacht Rock, and I was there for when they were making it, like going to Channel 101.
God.
They promised they'd put me in it, but they lied. You know, it's interesting. Like, I feel bad for people who are, like, so early at stuff that they're too early to get the recognition they deserve.
Yeah, they were the internet before there was an internet to have them, yeah.
So, like, if they'd been, like, 3 years later, they'd be, like, big stars.
That's so true.
You know? But, like, they were just too early.
Yeah.
Like, even when you watch it on the YouTube, the quality's just not that great. It's so early.
But I love the interview with Michael McDonald about that. He's like, yeah, they got some stuff right.
Yeah. Since I'm in possession of Alan, he was not feeling this.
I felt like the opening sax riff was a little, like, SNL-y.
Yeah.
Right? You know, I mean, in a kind of, whatever, nostalgic way.
It's a generational thing to love Michael McDonald, I realize. Like, the boyfriend is 3 years younger than me, and he did not like it. And I was like, because you're 3 years younger, and you don't fucking get it.
I think you're just on the cutoff.
Yeah.
Yeah, you totally are, because it's, you know.
Play him, like, the 10-minute version of Sweet Freedom and see if he can go with
if
that.
If he doesn't like fucking Sweet Freedom,
if he doesn't like that, done.
It's over.
He's out. And there's a 10-minute long version of Sweet Freedom?
Oh, hell yeah, there is. Oh. It goes on and on. It's great.
Oh, my God. How much is synth?
Quite a bit of it, but there's a lot of like,
yeah, there's a lot of choral undulations
in
the background.
I need this.
So tell me, Alonzo, is that your jam this week, or do you have something else for us?
I have something else for y'all. I am so lame when it comes to keeping up with music, but we're having this conversation at dinner the other night with some friends of ours about how the best Saturday Night Live sketches are the ones after the second performance of the musical act, like the 12:55, no one's watching
That's
anymore.
That's when they put on the weird stuff.
The weird stuff, exactly. That doesn't make any rational sense, but it just plays a lot of times. And one of the best ones in the last year or so was when Scarlett Johansson hosted, and it was a sketch where it was like a Jewish dentist's funeral and Scarlett Johansson and Keenan get up, and they had apparently, before he was a dentist, he had written these club tracks, and so they performed them at the funeral, and one of them was a song called Here Is My Butt, and once you hear it, you will have it stuck in your head for an uncomfortable amount of time.
Here is my butt as I lean against the wall. I shake it up and down. I press it all around, baby.
Here is my butt as I lean against the wall. drop it to the ground, baby.
Turn on the fan and watch your head blow.
Let it run tight like a nugget, yo, yo.
Here is my bow.
My butt.
It reminds me of that recurring like MTV 15 sketch or 5 sketch that they used to do with Keenan, where he, you know, he'd play like some space age Euro MTV character. And
oh, sing, right, with songs, like, DJ Dynasty
These
handbag.
Are my tiny moves. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Okay. There is a fun little jam.
Keenan's a living legend.
He is. Yeah. He SNL would not exist.
He is doing another season just so he can beat the record for longest running. Not ready
He's
for primetime.
Leaving after that. Trying to kid.
He'll have another excuse next year.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Margaret, do you have another butt song for us, or a little something else going on?
This is a little bit different. No butts are involved. No butts were harmed in the making of this. This is Night Jewel's "Too Good to Be True," and it's basically Night Jewel is Ramona Gonzalez. She's an LA person. This is her 5th full length. And this song has such good nostalgic vibes to me. It's like very mid 80s Janet Jackson, but like if Janet Jackson worked in like a Brooklyn gallery instead of like her crazy life that she had. So this is from the latest album, Real High.
Janet's escapade era.
Love Could Never Do Without You.
You know, like,
yeah.
I love that you described it as like if Janet worked in a gallery.
Yeah, like it's still like kind of
or
subdued.
A hotel lobby.
It's like subdued and arty, but you know, there's still the Janet vibe.
Yeah,
Janet with a little Solange in there, maybe.
Yes.
No, I mean, I was feeling some 80s vibes as well. Mm-hmm. And I mean, to be perfectly honest, one of the reasons that I revisited the song was because it was featured prominently in an episode of Master of None season 2. But I love this album in general and this band. And this song is called Say Hello, Wave Goodbye by Soft Cell.
It was a kind of so-so love, and I'm gonna make sure it never happens again. You and I, it had to be the standing joke of the year.
So one of the reasons I chose this song, really, is also because, you know, it came from their debut album, the 1981 Nonstop Erotic Cabaret, which, if any of you recall, had a lot of really ribald dance hits like Tainted Love, which mm-hmm. is the most famous one, and Sex Dwarf, right?
Yes.
And so to me, this is like a kind of, it's the last track on the album. It has a melancholic tinge to it and also something of a cinematic quality to it, I think. It's nice to have that. That aspect of the sentimental new wave come through.
Oh, yeah. No, they, every so often you would get bands that would put that hat on, and it would be, you know, it would be funk, 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 and then we're going to be in a 1960s French New Wave movie for a second here.
Yeah, I think this could get nicely tangled up with some Thompson Twins.
Oh, totally. Oh. And it's been covered so many times already by different people. I think David Gray covered the song as well.
And
there was a big remix that was done in 91. Anyway, it's a lovely listen. You've been listening to Pop Rocket, hosted by me, Karen Tongson, with Winter Mitchell, Margaret Wappler, and our special guest, Alonzo Duralde. Alonzo, so where can our guests find you on the socials?
Well, I am I'm the only Alonzo Duralde on Earth, so I'm super easy to find on Facebook. I'm at A Duralde, A-D-U-R-A-L-D-E, on Twitter, and I'm at LinoleumCast on Instagram, and my website is at linoleum-knife.com, and you can subscribe for free on iTunes.
Well, it was such a pleasure to chat and chew with you about films all night long, and so, you know, please do visit us again someday.
I would love that. I had a blast. I've always loved the show, and you know, I do a show at a kitchen table. So, you know, this is in this padded cell. I feel so professional. It's like I'm on Broadway.
We even have a timer now that always says the same time.
Exciting.
They like to keep us in the padded cell. Anyway, our theme music is Party Booba Trap by Ozzy Miso. Thanks to him for letting us use it. Thanks to Bon Schultz and Bunny God, a.k.a. Webster, for the 5-star reviews on iTunes. If you haven't already, please review us. Get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at Pop Rocket, or join our Facebook group and join the discussion. We're a production of MaximumFun.org, and our producers are Kara Hart and the indubitable Christian Duenas.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.